teaching.
Okay. You were there where the XML format was defined. You helped with the other formats in the past and also probably in the future. Can you tell me about the lifespan of a file format? From the idea, how it evolves to the drawing board, and then what happens when the developers get it, and what happens when end users get it?
Well, it's very difficult to develop a new file format. For example, the objective of XML is to allow anybody to create their own file format. And as a result, in the last several years, there have been hundreds, maybe thousands, of new file formats created based on XML, and most will be forgotten instantly, never used by anybody. Because it's easy to start developing a language. It's just like it's easy to start an open source project, right?
Right.
But like open source projects, most languages are ignored. You know, they're not used. So, since developing a language is difficult and has a high chance of failure, I recommend that you don't do it. The most languages are too ambitious. They try and solve the whole problem. They try and, you know, define a language that will completely describe some situation. But in fact, it's much better, history teaches us that it's much better to start with a simplest possible approach.
Okay.
And then allow it to grow. For example, before the 1990s, there were many different hypertext languages. HyperCard was well known, and also many others. And most of them were quite complex, quite sophisticated. And then in the early 90s, HTML came. And HTML is really very simple compared to the other languages that came before. For example, in HTML, the links can break easily. There's no guarantee that the links will not break. But HTML succeeded, whereas the more complex languages failed. So
because it was easy to learn?
It was easy to learn.
Okay.
We have in English the expression 80-20 point. And that means, in sometimes when you are solving an engineering problem, you can do 20% of the work and get 80% of the benefit.
Right.
And that seems to be very, very important in all technology and all new languages. So, you asked the question about the lifespan of languages.
Right.
So the languages we are inventing today, I hope, will have a very long lifespan. We have some examples. Simple ASCII files have a very long lifespan, but they're very impoverished. SGML was the format that came before XML, and the old SGML files from 1986, when SGML was invented, are 100% readable today. Unfortunately, SGML did not have a good internationalization story. It did not do Unicode. So XML is really the first meta language that is trying to be long-lived and also has a good internationalization story with Unicode. So I am now 50 years old, and I am quite sure that XML will live longer than me.
Right, but probably WordStar format will also live for quite a bit.
Well, even now, if you have a WordStar file, it's quite difficult to find software to open it. You know, and many times you will fail to open it.
Right.
So that is the difference, is that any format that is proprietary and binary, in particular is binary format, will be difficult to read pretty soon. And already we have lots of data files in the world that cannot be read. I have at home, I have some tape drives, some old backup tapes. Maybe I could find somebody to read them, but I don't know how. It would be very difficult.
But, like, for example, Open Document format and XML You mentioned there are some weaknesses in SAGML. Where do you see weaknesses of the future of current file formats?
Well, what do we need to do? We have some weaknesses in the XML area. XML has problems, but the problems are not too severe. They're acceptable. But the XML schema specifications have very severe problems. They are badly designed, they are too complex, they are fragile, they are weak, and I think that with luck they will die soon. So we have some problems there. We have a problem also that XML makes it a little bit too easy to invent new languages. So everybody invents new languages, and most of them are, as I said already, are a waste of time.
So what should these people do?
Well, if you have a problem, if you can solve your problem with XHTML, that's a very good idea.
Okay.
XHTML is not perfect, but it's quite rich. It has hypertext, it has hierarchy, and it has 1 billion programs in the world, you know, that can read it. So those are big advantages.
Right. And are you already thinking about the language of the future, like OpenDocument 2.0?
Well, I think that when you invent a new language, it is best not to change it.
Okay.
So, for example, there was XML 1.0. There is also XML 1.1, but it is a failure. Nobody is paying attention. So I think XML is finished. Now, ODF is interesting. There is a lot of software that will be written for ODF. And I think it is very, very important that any future versions of ODF must be 100% backwards compatible.
Okay.
So that old ODF documents will always be readable. Now, I think that it is necessary to do some more work because, as we were discussing yesterday, there are some omissions in ODF. For example, in the area of spreadsheets, the formulas are not defined in ODF. They are just a string. And that is really unacceptable. So clearly, you know, there's more work that must be done. But as they do that work, I think they must be very, very careful to preserve backward compatibility.
And so now, how do, I know, to finish the story, how do then file formats die?
They die when the software that reads them dies.
Okay.
You know, XML-based file formats are a little bit unusual in that they are also directly human-readable. So as long as Notepad and VI live, in principle at least you will be able to look at that textual file formats. But binary file formats die when the software dies. I think that the generation of file formats of today, of the last 5 years, will have a long life with luck.
Okay. And XML is human readable, everybody can use it, and ODF is the same. But how do you see ODF in relation to digital rights management?
I think
industry is pushing it, obviously.
Right. I think digital rights management is a disaster. It is going to cause huge problems, most sharply in the areas of media, music, movies, etc., but also in the area of office file formats. We have an explosion that is building up and waiting to happen, and that is the explosion of iTunes.
Okay.
Apple now has 2/3 of the online legal music market. It's a pretty big market. And so there are huge numbers of people who have bought, you know, hundreds of millions of songs from iTunes, and they don't realize that they can lose those songs any moment. You know, if you have a small bug in your iTunes and you lose your iTunes registry and you don't have a backup, your music's gone. Under the rules of iTunes, you can only transfer five times, three times, something like that, your music. And, you know, most people buy a computer every 2 years, every 3 years. So after 10 years, your music's gone. There are many people who are discovering, well, I got this music, I put on a CD so I can play it in the car. Oh, no, it doesn't work. So all of a sudden, over the next few years, there was going to be a huge number of people who discover DRM in a very unpleasant way. And right now, the old media companies, the music companies, the movie companies, are very strong politically. And they have given legal bribes to many politicians who have been passing laws to protect them. Fortunately, the situation is worst in America and is not so bad. Not so bad yet in Europe. So maybe it will be the case that the huge explosion will come in America and Europe will be spared the big political troubles that are coming. So that's the big problems we have with digital media. Now, in the area of office file formats, we have a practical problem that is coming, and that is that the Microsoft Office Suite has included now for some years DRM. So somebody who is in Microsoft Word or Excel can apply DRM to a document.
To encrypt it, for example.
Well, or just, yeah, to encrypt it and say you have to have DRM privilege to read it. And right now, OpenOffice can't read those documents. And it's not clear that OpenOffice can decrypt those legally.
Right.
So Microsoft, I'm sure, will be very happy to use DRM as a competitive weapon. So from my point of view, DRM is a very hot area right now, but it is almost all problems and almost no benefits.
Okay, so if you don't use the DRM for on our file formats, and obviously you don't want some information to be shared freely, how can we then prevent?
Well, there's a difference between DRM and encryption. Okay. Encryption is clearly a necessary thing. I mean, you know, on my laptop, I always have my hard disk is encrypted. I encrypt my Wi-Fi. I have a very strong security link to my employer's computers. So encryption is not a problem. DRM is this notion that I will provide you some data, but I will control how you use the data. You're only allowed to read the data on my software or using my hardware. And this is profoundly unnatural. When I go buy a car or a shirt or a house, you know, I give you the money, you give me the shirt, our relationship is finished, right? It's my shirt, I use my shirt however I want to use my shirt. And this idea that, you know, you're going to sell me something and then after you're going to control what I do with it is broken. It's a bad idea, it is a stupid idea, and it will never succeed.
So it will go away eventually.
It will go away, but not happily. There will be, you know, huge political fights, elections. You know, I'm sure there will be big, you know, elections and over DRM laws when people discover how unpleasant DRM is.
Right. Well, is there anything you would like to add to the discussion?
Just that this conference has been very educational for me. I've learned a lot of things, and that the chance to come here to Slovenia has been really wonderful, and I've enjoyed it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Snimaš?